Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network. For the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews, press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the number one online broadcast network for movie talk, this is the Cosplay Coach. Costume breakdowns and tips and tricks to create your own. And now, the coach yourself, Meredith Placco.
Gonna do it. Anyways, hi everyone. This is the Cosplay Coach, and we're back. We were
gone.
Yeah,
what happened last week?
I don't know. Sorry for not being around last week, but Miss Alana had to celebrate a big milestone.
Yeah, it was my birthday, so we went to Vegas.
Yeah! Woo-hoo.
And busted, your car broke down, and you had adventures.
Yeah, our tire flew off, and it was crazy adventures in the desert.
Not to get too sidetracked, but it was funny, because I was driving the other car, and Elena was calling me, and she knew I had a whole car full of people that also had cell phones. I'm like, why is Elena calling me? And I just hung up on her.
And just to watch you guys go by next to the tire, and I'm like, don't hit that tire, it's ours.
But it looks like you made it to Vegas safely and had a good birthday.
Yes, in return. Awesome. So we're back.
Here we are. A happy belated birthday to our cosplay coach, Alana Jordan.
Yay!
And as always, I am your host. I always say that like I'm hosting cabaret. Meredith Placco. And I'm joined with
Emma Fife, who can be found all over the internet at Emma Fife.
And I am Elena Jordan. You can find me on Twitter at Elena Jordan.
And we have a really special guest with us today. Dun, 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 dun. As I told Elena earlier, she is sitting next to nerd royalty.
Just dial it back.
I know, just dial it back. I just like to make her uncomfortable. But this we have is Jeff Henderson. You can find him at Planet Henderson, and we'll let him tell you a little bit about what he does.
I'm a storyboard concept and voiceover artist, and I've worked on a bunch of geek movies like the Spider-Man series and The Dark Knight and Inception and Oz the Great and Powerful, and I drew comics for a long time and designed toys for different companies for a long time and did concept art. And
that's pretty rad.
Do a pretty good Elvis.
So, yeah. So, and if you didn't hear, we're talking about the Batman.
Yes.
The one and only today. And we figured Jeff would be a great tie-in because, you know, his work with concept and character designs, he can really kind of get into that nitty-gritty stuff. We've poked about, you know, what it takes, you know, how much personality goes into designing these characters and their iconic outfits. And Jeff here is going to be our resident expert on all that.
Well, thank you. Yeah. And I'm a huge, 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 huge Batman fan.
Yeah.
So,
do you have a history with Batman?
Like, other than loving it as much, and like I feel like creatively, my creative life steeped in a lot of the mythology. Because I mean, when I was growing up, it was movies and comics were like the only safe place I had to go. Mm-hmm. So it's one hand kind of washes the other. Like, and as I got older, and we had talked a little bit about the show, Batman holds a real special place for me in terms of pop culture mythology, because I believe that Batman is completely singular unto himself when it comes to how brilliantly and perfectly he's conceived, from the costume to the rogues gallery to the mythology, and that everything else is like, there's Batman and the Joker, and then there's kind of everything else.
He really does stand in a league of his own. And I
absolutely
feel, you know, I think with anyone who's into comics and pop culture, I think we all have some familiarity with Batman. Like, even if maybe you're not the biggest DC Comics fan, you know, Batman's such a part of, especially, I know, us three are talking about, it's part of our childhood.
Yeah. I feel like you'd have to really be living under a rock in the middle of nowhere and also have complete sensory deprivation to not have heard of Batman.
At least one incarnation.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And we were talking a little bit before about how in other episodes about cosplay and how it's, you know, this great icebreaker and how there's this great outlet of taking something that you love so much and using it to fuel your own creativity to create something. And Batman is so iconic because it incorporates so many different aspects, from the comic influencing the films, to the films mm-hmm. influencing the comic, to all of that influencing your cosplay. So it's just kind of the perfect character.
And that's actually something I love with cosplayers too, is how many reimaginations of Batman we've seen. You know, we've seen the classic take from, you know, adapting the comics, or people who can do recreations of the film. But then you have like steampunk Batman, or I remember some friends went to the Renaissance Fair and did a whole Justice League medieval. You know,
that's
people,
awesome.
Yeah, people just will take this character and his design and retool it for themselves. And I think, you know, it's such a wealth of creativity. And you know, something you were touching on earlier was just how with Batman's outfit, how it no matter what incarnation it is, it's always iconic.
There's what, 7 decades of Batman mythology, mm-hmm. and over that time you have hundreds of iterations of Batman, and he's so perfectly conceived that every one of them's valid. That there's even just doing animated Batman, there's 25, 30 different versions of it. Mm-hmm. There's film Batman, comics Batman, there's old radio broadcast Batman. Yeah, there's the old film movie serials with the little pointy ears and like the cardboard mask in the 40s going, put them up your dukes, you know, and 23 Skidoo, you know. All you ships at sea.
Agents of the Japanese government.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that's, at least from a creative standpoint, from a design standpoint, that's the most amazing part of Batman as a creative endeavor or as an iconic piece of mythology, is that the mythology and the design kind of go hand in hand, mm-hmm. where one supports the other, and it's so perfect. And there's, and it's not even just a matter of within the Batman. There's the Robin, the Nightwing, there's Batgirl, there's mm-hmm. Batwoman, there's Ace the Bat Hound. You can have a whole extended family, gay, straight, black, white, male, female, even dog, and everyone can make a Batman costume that's completely unique to them, that they can identify with and invest themselves in, and you're not stepping on anybody's toes, and you're not retreading any ground.
Absolutely.
I think that's amazing.
And I would argue that with Batman, too, it's kind of, you can't really generalize Batman if you're somebody that says, I don't like Batman. It's like saying, well, I don't like food.
Right,
yeah, it's right. Like, but there's so many different mm-hmm. versions of Batman, and as you say, Jeff, each one is just as valid as the other, and I think that's mm-hmm. what makes this a particularly interesting costume to cosplay, because, as you say, everything is just as valid as the rest, so even if you aren't able to fabricate a crazy bat suit mm-hmm. like we see from the Tim Burton films on, you can make yourself a spandex, like, Adam West-style Batman costume, and it's just as awesome, and just as easily recognizable mm-hmm. and widely accepted as being Batman.
Hell, when I was a kid, it was underoos and a blue bath towel.
Yeah, there you go.
You know?
Yeah, I think we could still get those
eight films that we're talking about, mm-hmm. too. So it's crazy to see the evolution of Batman.
Yeah.
And so before we get into the evolution of Batman, a couple show notes. Just want to remind everyone that's listening, head on over to YouTube, hit that like button, subscribe to us, also head on over to iTunes and give us 5 stars because it keeps us coming back, because I have to say these things. I'm obligated to. But into the more fun news, also want to thank amazing Las Vegas Comic Con, which is June 19th through the 21st coming up. And you'll actually see all of us, Jeff and including, we don't have a camera on her, but Jenna Bush is also joining us in the audience. They will be there giving talks and panels about all things comic and creator. I'm really excited for this.
And we're all going to get our cars looked at before we leave.
Yeah.
Yes.
A little advance warning for you guys.
So we've got Alana and Emma are going to be doing some really cool panels for you guys. Mm-hmm. I'm excited. But yeah, come on out to the South Point June 19th to the 21st for Las Vegas Comic Con. I'm really excited, too, because we'll be giving away later at the end of the show the VIP package ticket.
Yes.
We've teased it. It's finally here. So we'll stay tuned to the end of the show for how to win that. And then, you guys ready for the big news?
Yeah.
Okay, so a couple weeks ago, I reached out to McCall's Pattern Company, and they reached back to me, and we had a really great conversation this week, and it looks like we're going to be teaming up to offer you guys some really amazing things from their cosplay line. Starting next week, we're going to have a really cool contest. We're going to do the Countdown to Comic-Con, which we want to invite everyone who's coming to Comic-Con to participate in a costume contest. contest with the Popcorn Talk folks in mm-hmm. Cosplay Coach. But those of you who can't make it out to San Diego, we're going to have a virtual contest just for you. Thank you so much to McCall's for sponsoring this. We're going to have some really great prizes from them that we'll be giving out. We'll talk more about that later at the show and kind of give you guys an idea of what you're going to win and how you can win it. I'm sorry. I'm like, this is, we talk
every about, time I yeah, think amazing. About the McCall yeah. sponsorship, I just get so excited.
And huge thanks to Meredith for being yes, so amazing.
Dude, I just wrote an email.
Amazing thing set up for you guys. It's all this woman.
We all, you know, the reason we did this show is we really love cosplay. And so many of you guys who watch and tune in and talk to us every week, you know, you're new to it too. And we get so many questions like, how can we do this? How can we start that?
Yeah.
And we want to be able to give you guys something in return to help, you know, better your projects and help get your hands kind of in the nitty gritty and start creating. So we're hoping going forward, this is just one of many things that we'll be able to offer you as awesome viewers of the show.
Yay.
So, all right. Now with that out of the way, it's time to get into creating an icon. We're going to look at the different Batman costumes and how they've taken inspiration from each other and how the Gotham universe has been altered by all the various incarnations of these classic characters, starting all the way from the first Batman film to the more recent things. I'm actually going to hand this over to Alana because I want to thank her so much because she took point and produced this entire show.
Yay!
So let's
all love Batman.
I know, but we all love Batman. But I want you to shine today, sweetheart. So this is all you.
Well, the original Batman series was created in 1939 by Bob Kane mm-hmm. and Bill Finger, and that's where we were talking a little bit before about how all of these different aspects influence each other. Bob Kane was a huge film fan, was actually on set for the original Batman where they introduced the Batcave for the first time.
Yeah, in the 1943 serial.
And the 1943 serial was actually created. They had never had the Batcave prior to that, and Bob Kane on set immediately called Bill Finger and said, "This is brilliant. Put it in the dailies for next week's comic strip,"
mm-hmm.
and it was immediately adapted. So that's just from the very beginning, the inception of Batman, it shows how they incorporate all these different elements and how the film can influence the comic and vice versa.
And the origin of the Joker goes back to The Man Who Laughs, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That was
absolutely.
The Black and White movie.
Yeah.
Yes, and even Alfred himself was completely changed. He was this
right.
overweight mm-hmm. man, and the comics was kind of this dumpy guy, and then when he was played by William Austin with mm-hmm. his portrayal, mm-hmm. he was taller and slimmer and had the little pencil mustache, so they redrew the comic to reflect that.
And I think that's fantastic because it also leads to one of my favorite backstories with Alfred, where he's actually part of the MI five or six,
right.
and he's, you know, post like former secret agent. Like, you know, it's more easier for me to envision Alfred
right.
being this like crazy, deadly badass who, you know, as opposed to like, oh, he kind of let himself
and
go.
And again, that comes full circle with Michael mm-hmm. Caine in the Dark Knight movies, where he mm-hmm. talks about his days with British Secret
yeah.
Service
yeah.
and Burma and all that stuff, which was
yeah.
a great callback 50 years later. It's
yeah.
crazy.
Mm-hmm. Which, yeah, I absolutely love because the Batman comics, they even had two versions of Batman. You have the Earth 1 Batman and the Earth 2 Batman. Mm-hmm. So they were able to run parallel stories at the exact same time.
Right.
Wow.
So that it's able to even open up the audience even wider. So the first Batman movie that really kind of took hold was the 1966 Batman. Mm-hmm. And that was heavily influenced by the Earth 1 Batman, which you can tell because they have the circular, the oval, the yellow
yeah.
with the bat symbol in the center, which, I mean, those were a lot campier costumes. They were really fun. I think we have a picture of some of the original.
Oh,
yeah, there we go. And so this more than any other version of the costume closely resembled the comic. And then you can even see we have, I think, a picture of Robin versus the comic.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, so you can see. And then Batman versus the comic, pretty much identical.
Yeah. And I, you know, as a lover of sewing spandex, I really love the Adam West bat suit because
yeah.
it's simplistic in its design, but it gets the point across. Also, I feel like people kind of gave Adam a little hell for being mm-hmm. overweight for the part, but he's really fit. Like,
yeah, he's not. Yeah. He's that's not, a relative thing.
Yeah.
Though. That guy was.
He fits the original description more than anyone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
6'2".
He was really fit. If you see him, there are
yeah.
pictures mm-hmm. of him without a shirt on. He's just ripped.
And
he's
that
just
voice,
a physically
yeah.
big guy.
Yeah, and his commitment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I studied acting for a long time,
mm-hmm.
and as an actor, there's a thing, like, you might look at that, oh, that's silly, and be dismissive of it because it's so campy. That is not easy to do.
No.
To commit like that. He was in there, like,
that,
the whole time.
And that, for me, with the Adam West Batman, you know, the 60s series, mm-hmm. that's actually why I think it holds up extremely well.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's because they went into it being committed to it being campy. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like they made the show in the 60s and were like, guys, this is a serious drama. Like, they meant for it to be that campy.
And I love that the movie reflects that campiness that they had from the series, but they were able to kind of update it more for a film audience.
Yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely.
And he rocked that suit and an ascot at the same time.
Yeah.
it's pretty awesome. It's pretty awesome.
And you can take that bat signal to anywhere on planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
You can take that to tribes in New Guinea that have never seen a television and they go, oh, Batman!
Yeah.
Yep.
You know?
There's something, too, about that older series and the subsequent film that it reflected the time, you know?
It absolutely did.
You know, we look at the dark and gritty comic movies we want nowadays, but there's something to be said about the 60s Batman and the time and the era that it reflected. I mean, there was a lot going on in America at that time, but I feel like we needed that humor and we needed the color and the energy that came from it. And there's sometimes I kind of miss that. And that's why while I love Nolan's Batman series, I tend to always gravitate more towards the animated stuff.
Yeah.
Well, and we'll get into TAS later. Well, even with the anime series, it was a little bit darker. But like Brave and the Bold, Bold and the Batman, I like them because they're fun.
Yeah.
Brave and the Bold was so good.
Yeah.
So good.
And I mean, that's how I feel about the 60s Adam West Batman. And the thing that I really like about it as well is they, in addition to that acting style of it being very campy and over the top, they also really committed to that in the design of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
As Elena was saying, it's like they tried to mimic the comic book exactly, so much so that they painted shadows onto Adam West's mask, because in the comics his mask was often like shaded.
Yeah.
So they literally did that.
It's brilliant. They did
also
such
the
a good job with it. Yeah. And people too, they gave Adam West some grief over the voice, but when you read the comics, because people associate it with the Dark Knight, the gritty Batman, but you read the comics and they say that it's cool and commanding, which nowhere does it say gritty and garbled.
No, he's more changes.
Right. Yeah. So it really just it's such a good reflection of how it closely tied into the previous works and how they were able to kind of fuel each other.
Yeah, totally.
And the Rogues Gallery, I mean, all the multiple versions of Catwoman who were all great.
Mm-hmm.
Cesar Romero was amazing as the Joker. Mm-hmm. That guy was amazing.
Oh my gosh, he's incredible!
Left his mustache on, creeped me the hell out when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And Gorshin as the Riddler was amazing. And hands down, the TV show had the greatest version of the Batmobile ever committed to film.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I saw that for the first time in person at Comic-Con a few years ago,
and
I lost my mind.
I used to live in a place in North Hollywood. The only reason I got it was because it was down the street from the shop that made it.
Yes.
Oh my gosh, amazing. We need an episode of Star Cars with the Batmobile.
And if we could just get it to drive out of the Batcave in Bronson Canyon,
it'd be amazing. Theta, if you're watching, Star Cars, Batmobile. Oh, and then
there's a great cape pattern, too, that you can get from the original Batman cape that has really severe points.
Yep.
That one's a Williams Studio 2, and you can get that on their website. They have just a pattern of it that's available.
So cool.
And
let me tell you, as someone who's done a couple bat suits in her time, making the scallops is always a pain in the butt.
Because so much harder than you think.
Yeah, you don't think it's going to be, but it's really, it's difficult, especially if you're lining it because you get the puckering at the bottom.
They have also great patterns, too, for the fins on the gloves.
Oh, on the gloves.
Which is nice. So, and that's really reminiscent of the 1966 version versus the 1989 version.
Mm-hmm.
Directed by Tim Burton, which is one of my personal favorites.
I love the Tim Burton movies.
I love Tim Burton too. So, this one had the black bat suit with the yellow ellipsis symbol and the yellow utility belt. It was really heavy armor, which they also had the chest armor incorporate the bat symbol.
Yeah, which
was, you know, a little bit more unique, which they then adapted for later films as well.
Yeah.
So you can really see how each of these movies, as they snowball and as they go, pull in different aspects from the previous films.
What I thought was really interesting about this is, you know, in terms of incorporating, you know, previous versions of Batman, is that Bob Ringwood, who actually designed and created this bat suit, the bat armor, the first version of it that we've seen in the subsequent films, including, you know, up to the Christopher Nolan films, is that he'd never actually read Batman. He'd never read a Batman comic. He'd never watched any old Batman stuff. So he decided when he was tasked with designing this, he bought 200 Batman comics so that he could incorporate elements from all of the different versions of Batman into this Batsuit.
I love it. And they ended up making 28 different of the latex costumes of it that were different options and 25 capes, 6 cowls.
That's crazy.
Oh my gosh. No, from a design standpoint, you know, we're used to the spandex up until this point.
Yeah.
What was like kind of the thought process there? Like why go on?
Well, I think one of the big turning points in terms of how the movies reflected the comics was the Dark Knight Returns, which came out in 86, and the Killing Joke, which came out in 87, I think. And I mean, talk about darker in tone and that grim and gritty thing, which at the time was kind of a response. You know, it's this pendulum effect where people wanted Batman to be dark and more reflective of the comics, and I think the public consciousness was so ingrained with the Biff Pal Zappo thing from the TV show. And, you know, now we've got enough distance from both of them where they can both kind of occupy their own space and it's not treading on anything. But I think Burton was so taken with The Dark Knight Returns and The Killing Joke especially, I know, that I think his mandate from the production design to the performances to the script as much as he could, because I know originally he wanted to do a much more faithful adaptation of The Dark Knight Returns, but it by definition would have had to be rated R, so there's no way they were going to let him get away with that. But a lot of that darkness seeped into it, and I think aesthetically and the iconography of it too, like the yellow symbol from the earlier one, but it's all black, it's armor. So it's much more real world and like what would happen if a guy was crazy enough to dress up like a bat and try to kick somebody's ass.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, and Bob Ringwood, the designer, was also super committed. He was like, I'm not having any blue. I'm not having any bright colors. I want to do black. And of course, you were also working with Michael Keaton Batman, who is not a big guy. He is not anything like Adam West. He's pretty average size. He's kind of skinny. And so, you know, Bob Ringwood was like, I gotta make something that's sexy for this guy.
But I thought it was great because it goes to character. If you look at it.
No, it really does.
The way it sculpts and creates this illusion
Absolutely.
That he's yoked
out. And that was one of the things that they were saying is like, ultimately, because we were working with this smaller, not so muscular guy, we had to craft these muscles that ended up being so much more interesting than real muscles. When Bob Ringwood was first working on it, he presented it to Tim Burton. He's like, I think it needs to be sexy. And Tim Burton, and I have a really good quote for him actually about comic books where he was saying that, you know, teens like comic books because they are sexy. They, you know, they tune into the sexual fantasy at that time that they're going through because most teens are reading them during puberty. And so that Bob's design was less outfit and more a complete suit. It isn't tights and underwear worn on the outside, but a complete operatic costume to overstate the image Batman has of himself. We just took off the psychology of saying, here's a guy who doesn't look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, but so why is he doing this? So Batman has created this whole image for himself through this Batsuit.
I love that. There was only one problem with it. That Michael Keaton couldn't turn his head like a cow. So there was the one scene where the Riddler is shouting down, or I'm sorry, the Joker is shouting down to him from the helicopter, and he's supposed to look up. And so Michael Keaton turns and looks up, and it rips just from the eye all the way down, just destroys the cowl. So they say, okay, don't do that again.
Please don't.
But it ended up creating what's now known as the iconic hero turn where he just turns completely on his heels to turn his entire body around, which, again, reflects how the actor's portrayal is influenced by the costume design, is influenced by the director's vision, and all of this is this one cohesive thing that both Christian Bale and also Val Kilmer and various people have said about the costume that it helped them personify them, Michael Keaton especially, because it was so difficult for him to move in, that it created that statuesque image of this Batman that everybody then recreates later, not really aware that it's because of physical limitations.
And it's such a fascinating thing because, you know, from an actor's standpoint, you talk about, you know, there's so many actors who get into these costumes and that's when they really feel their character. But also from a non-actor cosplayer standpoint, when I put on that costume, I become that character and I feel different. I feel bolder and stronger or, you know, sexier if the case might be. And it is fantastic that, you know, comics and genre films can create these iconic outfits that allow us, you know, regular non-actor people to transform into something even for an afternoon.
Yeah.
And iconic's really the word because with Batman, that's such a through line through his whole history. You come back to that over and over and over again. It's not just one archetype. There's hundreds. It's not just one iconic piece. There's hundreds of them.
Yeah.
Burton's approach, Burton's silhouette, Burton's suit was completely different, but totally iconic on its own in a way that was completely separate from the TV show, from the comics, from TAS, from all that stuff. And I mean, and they're all totally badass. Every one of them, every incarnation is totally badass. And they, the real crazy design genius of it is, if you strip all the detail away from, you could line up every iteration of Batman ever made. It comes down to one simple silhouette, which is one line: the shoulders, the ears, the other shoulder. No matter what version it is, it comes down to that, and that's impossibly difficult to create something that archetypal and that iconic that's that simple when you strip it all down. It's crazy.
No, and it's, I mean, it's a true testament to the original designer. The original designer, it's amazing.
Yeah. And to really all the subsequent designers
ever, yeah,
to,
I mean,
create
to
something
that
unique that still has the iconic look.
Really curious to see how the how Batflick's going to hold up in that, in that lineup.
We'll see.
Duct tape
now,
Batman.
Now, thing with this movie, too, is they actually had to incorporate some product placement for it for Nike.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, they ended up, because they needed to, they crafted Batman's boots off of the Nike sneaker base.
Oh my gosh.
Just to
get that product placement in there.
Another thing that your designer is incorporating all of these elements. The director then says, okay, also we want Batman to be badass and wear Nike.
Right.
And your response is, okay.
Okay, so you want like a swoosh?
Okay, now I'm going to put a challenge out there to any cosplayer to do that. I want to see an original 89 Burton Batman with the Nike sole.
With the Nike.
Amazing. Yeah.
Now, I loved for this one, they had the bat emblem on it. That was the 3 feet points. We have, I believe, a picture of Michael Keaton in the original.
Because there was a legal dispute with the first one, right?
Yeah, because the WB.
I read about that.
Yeah, they weren't allowed to use the 2 feet point emblem. It wasn't granted at the time of filming, but luckily they had it for Batman Returns.
Yes,
so that's one of the things
the
that changed. But that's why they had to incorporate the iconic classic symbol. With basically reinventing the Nike swoosh, but making it where it's this iconic representation, but a subtle change to get away from the Greek it enough to where you can get the product placement out of the way. So there are all these elements that the designers have to incorporate that you don't even think about when you're watching the movie.
Not at all.
And it's just, it's so crazy.
I keep thinking about back then, Nike having the mandate was to do it Nike, and I keep imagining like an Air Batman campaign, like Air Batman, where he's like this with the cape going behind him.
I
really
thought that was a missed opportunity.
Him and Jordan in a commercial.
That would have been fantastic.
So Buttrick released a Batman Returns template that they have, which is adorable.
I wonder if it's in the McCall's Butterick archives.
Catalog.
I know you can get it on eBay.
Yeah, I'm going to send an email to be like,
I vividly remember these patterns because I was obsessed with Batman Returns. Like, I made my mom make me a Catwoman suit, like Michelle Pfeiffer's. She made it out of fabric.
Wow, talk about crazy iconic designs, too.
Right?
Wow.
We actually, James B. in our chat was saying that the 92 Catwoman is his favorite costume from the Burtonverse, and I agree.
Yes, and we'll be talking, actually, we're going to be talking about the DC Bombshells, the women of Batman and Beyond next week. So
all the
really
girls
excited.
Because a lot of us, even behind the scenes,
a lot of us like, oh, I have all these other people. I'm like, no, let's give the girls their own episode. They deserve it. So that'll be next week.
I'm excited.
But so, this I'm like, I want to see someone make this.
It's the littlest Batman.
I was going to say, I'm trying to remember now if my mom ever made this for my brother. I can't remember. Mom, if you're watching, text me later.
Yeah. This one for Batman Returns still had the same issues with the cowl, but they made the actual costume out of like a thinner, more flexible rubber. Mm-hmm. And they had made the first one out of like this thicker foam rubber. So this one gave a little bit more flexibility. It had a little bit less of the definition to it that the first one had.
It looked more like armor, right? It was sculpted.
It looked more like armor. But it was very much similar to the original design, except for the emblem, of course, looked more like the actual.
They refined the cowl on Returns a little bit, too.
Yeah.
Which it was a little bit sleeker. And because in the first one, his cheeks were kind of puffy because the latex was really thick.
I was just recently rewatching the first one, and I was like, there's a lot going on in the cheekbone area with this mask.
Well, and you have to think too, like, you know, we're so used to the materials we have access to now. We can create things for these bat suits, but, you know, 20 years ago, what they had to work with, like mm-hmm. having to create their own types of foam rubber.
Oh, yeah.
For these.
They made a, like, fiberglass mold of mm-hmm. Michael Keaton's body to physically sculpt all of these pieces onto him.
Which is,
yeah.
Yeah, it's easy to take it for granted now, but, you know, mm-hmm. a lot of things that we take for granted now in movies with all this pop culture iconography, these people invented it. There was nothing to refer to.
I would argue that without the Burton Batman films and them having fabricated this entire suit, we wouldn't see stuff like we see today in you know, the more recent Batman films and in even some of the Marvel movies, like the Avengers and things. We would not.
It pretty much revolutionized the look and the concept of how 100%. To create. Which is gone in so many directions now.
I mean, and wasn't it? It's legendary makeup artist Keith Baker did so. Didn't he do some
Rick
work?
Baker did for Batman Baker, Forever.
Yeah.
Batman Forever, was the next one that was in 1995, and that was when they replaced Tim Burton.
Okay.
After Joel Schumacher took mm-hmm. the reins, Michael Keaton, I guess they had some agreement, so he dropped out, and that's when Batman was then replaced with the different actor, Val Kilmer.
Right. Yeah.
So that was when it led into Val Kilmer Batman, which...
Into the duct.
Yeah. Well, that was really... It was just crazy because Warner Brothers replaced Tim Burton because they felt that the sequel should have made more money.
Yeah.
And so they said, well, we're going to mainstream it. We'll get a new director, which is now you think... Mainstream director.
Yeah.
Not Tim Burton. He's too out there. Well, he's now like one of the most mainstream that you have.
I agree.
Kind of crazy to see how they thought that direction and then.
Yeah.
Maybe, especially because where
Batman Returns went. You can argue that Batman Forever kind of revived some of that campiness. You know, it brought some of the fun back. And I enjoy Batman Forever for what it is.
Yeah, I agree.
Also, one of the best Seal songs ever came from that. Kiss from a Rose. Let's just acknowledge that.
The U2 song was really good. They had a really cool animated video.
The whole album is great.
I actually like this movie a lot.
Yeah,
but
me too.
It was one that you have to look at the time period. It was 1995. Mm-hmm. They're even quoted as saying that they wanted a more MTV, organic, an edgier feel. Yeah. So the best way to do that is to just add nipples.
Of course.
Fat nipples.
Schumacher will never live that. That is going to be on his gravestone.
Yep, that's all his quote. That's going to be on his grave.
Are you kidding me? I think that will be on my gravestone is how I'm remembered. And because every interview they ask him, hey man, what's up with the bad nipples? Like, even now.
I know.
People are still baffled
because you can't talk about it without addressing it.
Is it the car? Chicks dig the car.
Now, they actually had two different suits for this one. The Panther suit. I believe we have a photo of that.
The Panther suit, first of all.
Yeah. Oh.
There you go.
No, yeah. There.
See,
there
that's
the Panther suit.
That's a great looking because that's like a mashup of the first two Burton ones, and that's really a great design.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that was the first one that we saw in this film, too. So, initially, as an audience, you're like, oh, that's really cool. It's not that far from what we saw.
And you got to give it up to Val Kilmer was a handsome dude.
He was a really handsome dude.
He could sell Bruce Wayne and Batman. I'd buy Val Kilmer as either one of those dudes.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
And I love, like, you know, if you just black it out, the silhouette alone on that bat suit is, to me, one of the most iconic of the film suits.
Because he looks like a feral animal. He looks like he could jump out of a corner and, like, take someone up 10 stories and hang him from a ledge.
And I love this particular utility belt, too, because it has a little bit of a slope. It kind of, you know, draws some of the lines in. I mean, it's actually something you see more on female characters than male.
Absolutely.
But it works so well in this design because it broadens his shoulders and gives him that, you know, that the trapezoid.
The upside down triangle.
Yeah. And this was such an interesting film because they were able to use the storyline to explain why they had an entirely different suit later on. Was that when the Riddler destroys all of the original bat suits, he then has to wear the sonar suit.
Which helps him throw his batarangs for some reason.
The Panther suit versus the sonar suit.
Oh, yeah.
So you can see, really incorporates more of the chest piece, the emblem into the actual costume. This was another one. That's when they had the white, because the sonar were able to slide over on the cowl to give them that night vision, that extra
vision. Where things
vision.
Start going downhill design-wise.
Yeah. but I can, you know, while the execution wasn't there, the concept is great because you think about a bat. He, you know,
right,
bats
right.
use
yes.
sonar, and the idea of incorporating his namesake into the suit is a really good idea design-wise.
And all the later ones incorporate the flat bat
yes.
on the chest.
Yes.
As I always preferred the symbol.
Yeah.
And not just aesthetically, but it goes to character again. Mm-hmm. I remember in Dark Knight Returns, there's a great thing where Batman gets shot in the chest.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he talks about specifically designing the plate as a target for people that are going to shoot him
right.
because his head's more vulnerable and it draws their fire to his chest mm-hmm. where he's safe.
Smart.
Yeah.
And I always
yeah.
thought that was a really cool little detail thing that seems to get lost when it just... And there's something powerful and I kind of, you know, like,
yeah,
I'm Batman.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah. As we said, Batman establishes himself as a symbol. That symbol mm-hmm. is more
yeah.
important than the man
it's
in
literal
the suit.
And figurative.
That's absolutely
yeah.
true.
Yeah.
Yep. Which I absolutely love both of these costumes mm-hmm. and thought that this was a great contribution. Apparently, they felt the same because they created an entire Butterick line off of this one, which let's look at these. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. Look at that stitching. That's fantastic.
Yeah. Yep. Check out Robin.
That's like mid-90s rave Batman.
That's perfect. I mean, that's why I love Robin, because he's so colorful.
Yeah,
and he looks great
awesome.
In, like, cotton lycra.
Yeah.
That's how he should be
out,
done.
I mean, Burt Ward's mask yeah. in the 60s series was literally made of felt.
Now, this... I love the little baby Riddler. This is actually funny. They had some issues when they were filming this, because Tommy Lee Jones really got into it with Jim Carrey.
Really?
So there are some scenes, because Jim
oh,
Carrey was doing
that. Yeah,
he was
yeah.
doing all these big... He was kind of... entertaining the crew as well behind
yeah.
the scenes,
that's
doing
Jim
these
Carrey.
Good things. So Tommy Lee Jones mm-hmm. went up to the director and said, "Hey, you need to tell him to stop doing that." He said, "No, it's great, it's great."
Yeah.
So there are a few scenes, if you watch Tommy Lee Jones, she starts imitating the Riddler and he starts doing like these crazy things, and it was really just him as a subtle F off to
oh
Jim Carrey
God.
That ended up making it to the movie and being kind of entertaining. Yeah. So.
And Tommy Lee Jones was the only thing, because I like the movie, I think it's a great point.
Yeah,
it's really
fine.
Good for what it is.
Yeah.
But the thing I always thought was a bummer was Tommy Lee Jones is so good, and I just wish they had either saved Two-Face for his own movie and let him
right.
done the whole thing and played
yeah.
it straight, because there was just too many of them, and it was great for Carrie's Riddler, but I think Two-Face didn't really
yeah.
benefit from the melted
yeah.
down Crayola crayon.
It was too much crazy
thing.
It was.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. and, you know, I've always said that this was a role Jim Carrey was born
oh.
for. I love him in this. The way that Patrick Stewart is
yes.
Captain Picard.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
His performance in this movie is absolutely
yeah,
brilliant.
And it does, unfortunately, not, I wouldn't say outshine Tommy Lee Jones, but it does,
yeah.
it doesn't mesh.
Yeah.
Right.
And his
it
costumes are
yeah.
bonkers.
Too, and that's another kind of testament to where there's so much in the Batman universe that sometimes producers say, oh, let's throw everybody
yeah.
in.
Yeah, and
then,
more isn't better.
No.
More is
yeah.
just more.
Yeah, and then
sometimes.
You just go, well, there's not enough
Avengers.
Time.
Sorry.
Now, before we move on to George Clooney's Batman, I want to back up just a little bit, because I know Emma is a huge fan of the animated series.
Yeah, and I actually think that animated series is sort of a nice bridge in some ways between the Burton Batman films and the Schumacher Batman mm-hmm. films, where the animated series, we started seeing a little more of the fun being pulled
yes.
into it, like from the Adam West series. That's something that we see a lot mm-hmm. in the Batman series that have held up and been extremely successful, is because they are so extremely stylized. So basically when creators Bruce Timm and Eric Radomski were designing the series, they wanted to emulate the Burton films, and they wanted to incorporate the otherworldly timelessness, they said, basically, that was in the Burton films. So they had ridiculous things in it, like police blimps, which don't exist, but they're like, they look great in our world, so let's do that. Another thing is that I thought was really interesting was that they insisted that all of the backgrounds in this series
have red skies.
Yeah, and that they were drawn with light colors on black backgrounds. They were not drawing on white backgrounds. They were drawing on black backgrounds to give it that kind of gritty... It's almost like a film noir look.
It
yeah.
is. I love that. And something that I love about the animated series specifically that I feel the other non-comic mediums of Batman haven't really encapsulated is how much Gotham itself was a character.
It very much is. And the thing that I also really love about animated anything from a cosplay standpoint is it allows you so much more room for interpretation because you are not trying to emulate a physical costume that already exists. Mm-hmm. So you have with the Batsuit in this version, quite honestly, more than anything else, this is like a more serious version of the Adam West costume.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And it's very based, you know, in the comics. And I mean, I have an image there that is like an evolution of how it kind of went throughout Batman and then ultimately ended with Terry McGinnis and Batman Beyond. But you can see, you know, it started that there was the blue lining in the cape and then later on it was a gray lining. And so there's a lot of fun sort of bat suits to play with, even within the animated universe. And again, it's like you can make this suit out of spandex and nobody's going to be any the wiser because, hey, maybe that's what it's made
and
out of.
And all four of those designs harken back to a different era of Batman.
Exactly.
The first one's like 60s Batman.
Yep.
The second one's like total Frank Miller, Dark Knight Returns.
Yeah, it totally is.
The third one's like the most contemporary amalgam of all three.
Yep.
And then the last one is future, like forward-thinking sci-fi version, which is just as valid on its face.
Absolutely.
I always thought Tim's version of Batman was pretty much the definitive one. It has a quality that to this day none of the films have gotten right.
I agree.
And I'm actually shocked in all the years they've been doing the films that they've never reached out to Paul Dini, who wrote a lot of them, Bruce Timm, and had them consult or do something to incorporate some of the flair they had from the show because it was absolutely pitch perfect.
It was, and it's like stylistically and just tone wise, I feel like they completely nailed it.
And for so many of us, you know, this is our Batman.
It is.
This is what we were introduced to, grew up on, and you're right. Like, you know, I look at the upcoming Suicide Squad film, which I feel like that should be a Dini story, and it's like, you know, I know he hasn't really done Suicide Squad, but it's so ripe for his storytelling, especially his Harley you know, one-off stuff. And I would love to see, if we're going to reboot the franchise again, let's do it with this world, because I think there's so much to draw from.
I agree.
And especially if you want to reach both a young and an older audience, this will draw us to the new film because it's within our childhood.
Absolutely.
And then it'll also speak to a younger generation who wants to be attracted to
something. And the game designers, the Arkham series of video games is hugely iconic and popular.
Absolutely.
Because they incorporated a lot of hints of the mythology
and
from
the
old
different
animated show. Absolutely.
Exact replicas of that. So whereas the animated series really just hit the target, kind of a sharp contrast with 1997 Batman and Robin.
Oh, that was a time.
All of the actors at some point have apologized for their roles in that movie, ranked as one of the worst superhero movies ever. Actually was nominated, though, for Best Makeup and Best Costume Design for the Saturn Awards. Didn't win either of those, but won multiple Razzies. It was nominated for 11 of them, so...
Indeed.
Yikes.
And that's all we'll say on that, I guess.
I feel like this was a movie that was made to sell toys.
Although...
pretty much, which actually, it was Chris O'Donnell who played Robin who even said, quote, he said, it just felt like everything got a little bit soft the second time on Batman Forever. I felt like I was making a movie. The second time, I felt like I was making a kid's toy commercial.
And there you go.
There you go. And there you go. And basically, they're popped right out of the package.
Yeah. On YouTube, there's a mashup, like a collection of all of Schwarzenegger's terrible puns.
Oh my god, yes.
All collected as long running pun, and it's amazing. It's so spectacularly bad, it comes all the way back around, and it's genius.
Oh,
so if you get a chance,
amazing. Track
down the Schwarzenegger montage from Batman and Robin and save yourself from watching the rest of the movie.
Yeah, it's all the best freeze lines.
Let's kick some ice.
Yes.
No.
Guys, I just think of them in my head when I'm playing Arkham, though. Yeah. And anytime you're in that level where you're like running from Mr. Freeze and you're hiding from things, and I'm just like,
chill out, come on.
I want to get a mod for Arkham so it can just be.
Ice to meet you, is what our producer just said to us.
Oh my god. I love you, Alexis.
But then Batman got back on track.
Batman got cool again.
It got cool again.
It did.
So there was a minor dip, but even that one was pretty fun. But Batman Begins, 2005, Christopher Nolan. This is really hailed as kind of the resurrection of Batman after many producers really have rejected movies after the failure of Batman and Robin, saying that basically thought that the franchise was somewhat dead.
Which...
Batman can never die.
No.
Unless he's Earth 2 Batman in 1979 when he was killed.
Or he gets hit by a cosmic bullet.
Sure.
Yeah, then there you go. There you go. But, this was the Christian Bale Batman that really kind of the new generation hails as the Batman. This is when we got the complete new bat suit. Very mobile bat suit that would actually be able to fight and crouch and
turn his head.
It was separated. Luckily, they based the helmet off of, they based it off of a motorcycle helmet that was disconnected from the neck, so they were able. Luckily, the actor could move his head up and down, side to side for the first time.
And it was brilliant. They actually put that in the movie, where that's actually a point of the story. Yeah. Where it's like, come on, help me! I can't look at nothing here.
Yes,
because by that point, the audience was saying, why is this still happening? Mm-hmm. So it was kind of nice that they were able, Lindy Hemming, who was the costume designer, was able to say, hey, this needs to be a plot point because this is ridiculous that our character is limited.
Yeah, and also, you know, while we still don't have the iconic yellow symbol, I feel in terms of costume designs in the film, this is kind of the what's coming up to the fully realized bat suit. And you know, it is a lot due to the technological advancements we have in costume design and making and the materials we have. But it is just so fantastic that, you know, while we don't have the yellow symbol, we do have the gold belt, which draws attention and breaks it up. Which I thought was a really smart design choice. I also like that they kind of went away from the pointed cape to a more, like, abundant flowing cape. It really reminds me more of The Dark Knight Returns.
Oh,
any of Frank Miller's drawings of Batman always has just such, you know, like, layers upon layers of fabric.
Yeah,
you can hear that thick cloak sound.
Yeah. They created the whole thing out of their own specialized parachute nylon. That was the same that was used by the British Ministry of Defense.
Oh, my God.
So they used, they took that fabric and said, you know, basically, this is good enough for a real-life soldier. This is good for Batman, who is the...
Yeah, and this is also when we start to see the incorporation of dye sublimation, which is a process of taking a fabric and putting like a coating, a plastic or urethane coating on top of it. And it was used for some of the under armor parts for Batman, but it's most iconic for when we skip a couple movies ahead to Catwoman, Catwoman's costume. So, but this dye sub process is so essential in the modern day superhero costume that we see it, you know, starting to use here, and now it's also a great process that 10 years ago us fans couldn't access it, but now people, our peers in the cosplay community, a couple of them have dye sub machines and are doing dye sub suits for people, and it's really awesome to have access to that.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
But I love how Meredith was talking before about how, you know, you put on your cosplay, you kind of embody this character.
Yeah.
Because the suit had so many difficulties, even though he was able to move his head and had a little bit more mobility, it was so hot and uncomfortable that Bale even said that it, because it heated up so much, it kind of helped him create the foul mood of the character.
He said, Batman's
meant to be fierce and you become a beast in that suit, as Batman should be. Not a man in a suit, but a different creature.
Yeah. Right. Well, that's very much what Batman is about, because Bruce Wayne is just like a rich guy. He doesn't have any powers.
Well, Bruce Wayne's really the man. I always thought that Bruce Wayne's really the facade. He's really the costume.
Right.
And Batman's the real
deal. Yeah.
And then Tom Hardy finally goes, how do you go to the Batman? Threw me in all that stuff. Batman.
Right? And I love the 2008 Dark Knight. They kind of updated it more. And they were they improved upon the design. They added the wide elastic banding that would help bind the costume, so it looked like a more sophisticated technology. It looked more like it was a second skin for him.
Yeah.
Which is really reflective of how the...
And the cowl was attached. It wasn't just a little cute triangles. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like the whole neck piece.
It felt like it was part of it, because in Batman Begins, it definitely was it looks too separate for me. And this looks like a complete suit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
All great. Just the iconography. Just those three alone. I mean, it just is fantastic.
Yeah. It's amazing. They kept the same kind of costume remained unchanged since Dark Knight into
Dark Knight Rises.
Dark Knight Rises. Because part of it, too, was that the cowl was sculpted directly to Bale's face. And so it became the perfect fit. It was just a great costume. So that's another thing. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Just keep it the same.
It's
leave it
true.
To the next movie.
It
makes sense for the character.
For the next movie.
So we're going to look at one last vintage McCall's pattern, which I love. It's just, this was their kind of general Batman from back in my day. We have just kind of the loose Batman look. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So
that's
when in doubt,
sick.
When in doubt, you still have an option. Oh, even if you just have a big black sheet and you want to be Batman, you can still rock it.
Oh, wow.
Or albino Darth Vader.
Yeah. I'm like, is that supposed to be Storm Shadow?
I love it. Now, Meredith, I know we had some fan submissions.
We did. I'm super excited. Let's see if... Oh, no, I guess not. Did they not get in there, Alana? Oh, no.
Oh, my gosh.
There was a... Well, she's going to check. Because I did want to show off a couple. One of them, hopefully we'll find it. It's Michael Cox, who is one of the nicest Batman cosplayers I've ever had the honor of working with. I actually met Michael... God, almost 10 years ago now, when we were living in Florida, and I worked with him at a group called Heroes Alliance, and we did charity events. So we dressed up as the Justice League. He actually did, he did Green Lantern at the time, but now he's doing Batman. And we would go visit various children hospitals and spend time with sick children.
And
Michael's actually been like just a very dear friend of mine, and he recently started doing Batman, and I wanted to feature his Batman costume, but I feel like maybe the picture missed and now why don't we talk about
our super exciting news for all of our fans watching now.
Well, first off, don't we have a ticket, two tickets to give away to Amazing Vegas?
From what we're talking about.
Who was the winner from the Pride and Prejudice episode that I missed?
So from the Pride and Prejudice episode that you were not here for. Okay, so our next winner for two tickets to Amazing Las Vegas Comic Con is Crushing It Daily, who left us an awesome 5-star review on
iTunes. Crushing it right now.
Crushing it right now with those 5-star reviews and winning things. So far, Shayla Valencia, Tavish DeGroot, and Crushing It Daily, please email us at thecosplaycoach@gmail.com. Leave us all your contact info so we can pass it on to our contacts at Amazing Las Vegas Comic Con so we can get you guys in the door. Remember, you have to get yourself there, but you and a friend can come for free. Because you like us and are saying nice things about us, and we like that.
There it is.
This is Michael Cox's Batman. He actually incorporated some of the armor design, but still sticking with that original comic spandex stuff. So it's just something I wanted to show up there about how you can even take your own interpretation of the iconic comic design and kind of revolutionize and modern it.
Mm-hmm. So. And it's even better if you use it to make children happy.
I know. Yeah. I love it. I need to get back into doing more of that stuff now that I'm situated out here. But yay, thanks, Michael. He was our honor submission.
It was great.
Yes, and Meredith is about to make some of our viewers very happy right now.
All right, so we are going to do the ultimate Amazing Las Vegas Comic Con experience. This will be for 1 3-day badge, VIP check-in. That means you don't have to wait in any lines. You just go straight up to the VIP booth. You're going to get early admission into the main hall 30 minutes before to get all the shopping done. This also gets you priority seating on all the panels. So with Rob Liefeld, Greg Capullo, who's drawn Batman for years, Kevin Eastman's going to be there, and more. You're going to have your own special front row seating just for you. And also, they've got a really great gift bag with some original artwork and con exclusives. So this is going to be yours to win. Again, you got to get yourself to Vegas. But we'll get you in the doors, and we'll get you all this cool stuff. And I think what we're going to do for a prize, want to do a video challenge?
Yeah,
I think we're going to do a video challenge. So we want you to dress up in your favorite cosplay and submit us a video just saying, hi, my name is, and you're watching The Cosplay Coach, and tell us why you love cosplay. We're going to post the videos on our website and on our Facebook page, and we'll let viewers vote, and the winner will get the Amazing Las Vegas Comic Con VIP package.
Yay!
So, you can also meet us there. We're cool.
Yeah.
And then also, next week, we will be unveiling our Road to Comic Con costume challenge. You're going to have an entire month to create a costume, and you're going to win an amazing prize pack from McCall's Pattern Company and some other sponsors. So stay tuned next week for what that challenge is, and we'll get the ball rolling for that.
Yes.
So make your video now, and then make your costume later.
Exactly.
And your costume can be something you made for the Amazing Vegas challenge. Something you bought. Just show us why you love cosplay, and we're going to share it with the world.
Me and Jen are going to do Pinky in the Brain.
Yes, I love it. It's wonderful.
Take over the world.
All right, guys.
Come on, Bree.
All right, we have to wrap it up and head out, but we will be back next week. Once again, go to YouTube, hit that little like button, tell us that you love us, head on over to iTunes, give us the 5-star rating, and comment. We like to talk to you, so leave us comments and we'll write back. Once again, I am Meredith Placco at M Placco.
I'm Emma Fife at Emma Fife.
I'm Elena Jordan at Elena Jordan.
I'm Jeffrey Henderson at Planet Henderson.
And thank you so much, Jeffrey, for coming out and talking
about
it.
It's absolutely my pleasure.
Awesome.
It's my pleasure.
All right, we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.